Now, from a nondescript server room in a top secret location in Southern California, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
This is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Amongst all of the different things we're going to cover on the news, we're also going to be talking about skills that every IT person needs from both sides of the coin, both perspectives. Steve Keske is going to talk about SpaceX, a Starship, and other ideas for getting to Mars. We've got a couple of listener questions. Why does this comes from Chloe? Why does cloud storage say it's full when I deleted a bunch of files? Felix, why does nostalgia hit tech harder and faster than anything else? On the IT Pro series, Amazon's ultimatum to relocate or retire has some distinctly deep implications. Keith M. Cedar is going to talk about spotting quality smartphone apps. Marty, we're going to revisit the Ricoh projector. On the Scam series, the goal is to hook you through some crazy, mysterious conversations, and I'll unpack that. And we have Dr. Doreen Galley has come on back, and she's going to be talking about robotics and automation observations that she had at a couple of recent conferences. All of that, of course, on this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com. Very easy. You can also check out the podcast there at computertalkradio.com, or you can also contact us through the website. We've got a form filled out there, form to fill out, rather. We also have a phone number, 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news. And Apple was the first company to hit the $1 trillion mark in market capitalization. They were the first to hit $2 trillion. They were the first to hit $3 trillion. This week, however, their streak of success was broken. NVIDIA, they went through, they poked above the $4 trillion mark on Wednesday for a short bit, and then continue to lounge around that mark. This is one of the big indicators of AI, for which the big choices for chips come from NVIDIA GPUs. There may be some hurdles ahead with new export restrictions to China, but many companies are all getting in to drive this boom. For market capitalization, let me go through the rest of the top five here. Microsoft, second place at 3.7. Apple is a distant third at 3.2. If you're marking it on your scorecard at home, Amazon sits at 2.4 and Alphabet, aka Google, at 2.2 billion. Trillion, rather. Trillion with a T. On the other front, or the next front in regards to billions, this past week, news came out of someone moving around a little bit of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is hovering around $116,000 as I speak. And these folks, they put some cash in a few years back, $210,000 in 2011. The amount moved is about 80,000 actual bitcoins, or translated at the current number right now as I'm recording, it's somewhere around $9 billion US. Now, due to the anonymity of the cryptocurrency, we don't know who bought it, who sold it, or anything more. Yes, there are others out there with large wallets of this particular cryptocurrency, but this is something that's got a lot of people watching. I want to kind of look at this from one perspective. If someone's cashing out that kind of volume at this point, they may be getting out while the gains are good. I don't know. I've always avoided any of the cryptocurrencies. What little I've tinkered with them just for fun has not gone well. So I don't suggest it for anybody. Now, back in October, we got some good news that came to us. This came out of the Federal Trade Commission. They announced a click-to-cancel rule, and they talked about it a lot, and it was great. It was due to go into effect right about now. There was a last-minute ruling this week by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the Federal Trade Commission made a procedural error, and now they've got to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to protect us from those that would hold us hostage by burying those cancel options. Okay, so some companies have gone for it. They have done the right thing. They have proceeded to move towards making it better, easier, and so forth for consumers. But this kind of last-minute announcement may throw a lot of that into question. Our overall hope here at Computer Talk Radio is that the FTC will pursue whatever hoops they must perform to get this to the next level and not let anything get in the way of protecting all of us, the consumers, the people who are providing money to these companies and want to just simply leave instead of being held hostage. And on a similar hostage front, a case moving through the courts on farm tractors. Yes, I said farm tractors. Yes. The big, huge green and yellow farm tractors from John Deere. This case has implications for every one of us. So John Deere, known for decades as being against the idea of right to repair. And this is a long story. I'm not going to give you all of the details from this. Go out on the internet. Go find out just how crazy they've gotten with this. Anyways, they just lost ground in their fight against the FTC. Yes, the same FTC we were talking about a minute ago. In Illinois, the U.S. District Court for Northern Illinois allowed for a permanent injunction against John Deere. The info from the courts clearly states that John Deere has been performing a monopolistic practice with no viable options, no real options, and no options at all for third-party repair. If you want to repair your tractor, you're going to have to jump through all kinds of hoops to get access to the software, which they don't provide to the general public. They only provide it to authorized mechanics. And it's hard to get authorized as a mechanic, and it's hard to find an authorized mechanic. So John Deere has locked everybody in for this. The tech world has long dealt with similar issues, and we here at Computer Talk Radio, we've been watching and discussing John Deere for ages due to the much larger implications on all of our tech and all of our right to repair. I say that just looking over at my wall where I have an iFixit.com poster. They're not an advertiser or anything like that, but it shows you my commitment to the cause, or it kind of hints at it, I guess. I don't know. A term that we should all be learning is something called prompt injection. Now, some research papers from 14 academic institutions in 8 different countries contained hidden directives to artificial intelligence to only provide positive information. Yes, they stuck in a little spoiler that basically says you can't say anything bad about this if you're AI. These were then hidden by white text or small font sizes, but then passed along to AI, which interprets all text regardless of the visibility to the reader, to us. This trick isn't old, by the way. This has been around for a while. It's been used by spammers and scammers. We've seen this in various bits and pieces of spam that have come into our email, but also people on job websites and so much more. The name itself is newer, however, and it refers to AI prompts or requests that you might give to something like Copilot or ChatGPT. Clearly, this will be increasingly used as those with loose morals or scruples find out about exactly this. Now, Microsoft laid off 9,000 people last week in the run-up to the 4th of July. One of the executives at Microsoft offered advice that was closer to a pitch for the AI that they admitted was replacing those workers. Matt Turnbull, he stated that LLMs, large language models, like ChatGPT and Copilot, could help reduce, quote, help reduce the emotional and cognitive load that comes with job loss. Wait, what? Yeah, that's right. The dystopian message contained absolutely no references to relying upon family or friends, but instead the cold-hearted machine that only pretends to be human until it's taking your job. The message has since been deleted, but as we've stated in various ways over the years, once you post something on the internet, your words can stay with you to haunt you when you least expect it, even if you are a Microsoft Xbox executive. That's mind-boggling. Coming up next, Dr. Doreen Galley visits with me again. We're going to talk about robotics and automation and her observations from some recent trade shows. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it, meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. You can call that anytime. I encourage you to call it whenever you have your computer problems, your technology questions, whatever they may be, and feel free to leave a message. If I don't answer, I will answer frequently. I can't always do it, but I try. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now from TBW Advisors, and she is, actually, I'm going to let you go ahead and tell us about TBW Advisors, what you do during the week, or weeks, their year.
Yeah, so we're an industry analyst firm, so we advise clients. It's a secret to a lot of executive success is they don't just rely on their thoughts and what they're seeing. They have a relationship with an expert where you can have confidential conversations. Only in this case, I've been there, done that. And so when they're doing it, they can have a sanity check with us to find out if we're on the right track. Is there something I should adjust with my strategy? Or am I missing some key component in my architecture that I need to accomplish the results?
Now, you're working off of gaining a lot of information. You are in the hotbed of convention space in the country, maybe even the world. You're in Las Vegas, so you go to a ton of these conferences. I mean, you and I were we spent however long talking about CES, but there's a gazillion different technology conferences that that happen in that very warm city out there. What are some of the conferences that that people might know and have heard of?
Absolutely. So CES is a common one. It no longer stands for Consumer Electronics Show.
I know.
It's just a tech show. Yep. Fantastic tech show. NAB show is for National Association of Broadcasters.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's heavy in media. Adobe's here. That's heavy in media, more on the marketing side. Infocom is coming back next year. It's also on the media side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very excited about that. You have Identiverse. You have Black Hat and DEF CON. So you have a lot of cybersecurity. You have Manifest. And There's the Supply Chain Logistics Expo. The conference has like six different names. It's the White Label Expo, Supply Chain Logistics Expo. It's a big supply chain. There's a number of the Mobile World Congress is coming back to Vegas this year.
All right.
HIMSS, the Healthcare Technology Conference, was here this year, coming back next year. So regardless of which industry you're in, Pack Expo is a packaging conference for that part of the manufacturing facility.
Okay.
Fantastic robotics and automation.
Oh, yes.
Love it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Fantastic. Every 3 years, ConExpo comes. It will be here next year. So that's construction technology, as well as mining, lots of edge technology, lots of fluid dynamics as well. A ton of AI and machine learning, because these physicists have been doing it for decades, not just a few years.
Very cool. So I want to back up to one of the things you talked about. You talked about robotics and robots, and I think this is a great launch point for us to just spend the next 7 minutes or 6 minutes talking about what are the exciting things that you are seeing through these conferences in the world of robotics.
In the world of robotics, oh, that was crazy. At CES alone, they had a bionic leg, they had an exoskeleton, they had a sensor that imitated the human eye. They had a Desire robot developer kit. So if you want to build a robot, it was a developer kit. So you could make the developer and code it and create your own robot.
Like a rich grown adult's version of the old Lego Mindstorms.
Yes. Yes.
Very cool. I love that.
But it's actually used for industrial design too, for people
to
literally make their own commercial robots.
Yeah,
and once you have it prototyped and you have all the coding, you can go to the next level. They had some interesting sensors at a pre-touch sensor, so it knew what to do before it actually technically made physical contact with the device.
Okay.
So they had all kinds of parts to go into them. But if you went to different conferences, there's all different types of robotics as well. So there was one we saw. It was at Manifest, and it was the River AI, and this robot was for when you have the automated vehicle bringing the package all the way to the person's house, then what do? The car can't get to the door.
Right, okay.
It just can't. But you could have this robotic dog that knew how to grab a package, walk upstairs even, and hand it to you, or ring the doorbell and get a package from you. So I actually have a video of this robot dog. I have a video of all this stuff. I mean, I have 134 videos at CES. I'm sure Manifest had 30 to 40 videos themselves, so they're all on our channel. But there's this robot dog, which everyone loved. There was also this robot at CES that was highly for consumers.
Yeah, okay.
And it was specifically made for people with dementia.
Okay.
Because if someone has dementia and you give them a pet dog, service dog, to make sure they take the medicines and all of that, they have dementia. They might forget to feed it, take it out for the potty, all of those required things that you do with a real pet.
Yes.
So it's actually technically dangerous if you have Alzheimer's to have a service dog. So they made a robotic service dog for those with dementia.
That is really cool. There's a lot of different directions we can go in with all kinds of robotics. And I think we're starting to get to that crossover point where a lot of us are going to see things like this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, there's the things you saw, but that dog, they have a big one, they're making a smaller one, but you can imagine the different use cases of where you can put it.
So there's a ton of different things out there. This is a world where I think we need to be watching it, all of us.
Absolutely. You could see them coming into your home. We also saw this year at CES, Samsung announced Bali is going to be live this year. We first covered them in 2020. It's a little pet ball that rolls around and has a personality and can put a projection up onto your wall to help you with exercise, or has a screen and can give you information. It's like a home robotics. It's a yellow ball. It rolls around. It can follow you around. all kinds of stuff. But they announced this year at CES that it is going to be live in 2025, somewhere around this summer. So any day now.
Wow. We are really starting to... This is going to be an exciting world. Because I read a lot of science fiction growing up. And one of the dreams I had, of course, was, the idea of robots around the house. I saw the Jetsons and...
The Jetsons, did you like their mode of transportation? Because there is a saucer available for pre-order. They told us at CES. It's a drone, eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicle.
Yeah.
But since its blades are all enclosed in the vehicle, it's not a drone. It's automated, but it's not a drone. It doesn't have wings. It doesn't have flying propellers. It's all enclosed. So it looks like a flying saucer.
That sounds so cool. That sounds... I want one. Sign me up.
Shipping deadline by a day, finishing the prototypes. They didn't get it to CES. The guy was so upset. They by the time they got it done, they went to reserve the roads, and they no longer had enough time to reserve the roads to move it from where the prototype was to get it to Las Vegas.
Oh, no.
But I am hoping in 2026 CES, we will catch that on video. I'm sure they're going to have a major press event, and we always go to the press events and try to get the exclusive content for everyone. So that's going to be amazing.
Very cool. So now you've got a number of these videos. You've got over 8,000 videos.
Total.
Where can people go? What website can they go to start finding some of these videos you've got?
Well, all the videos are stored on YouTube, but you can also find the videos related to their parent research at tbwadvisors.com. That's T for technical, B for business, and W for with whispers. TBW, Technical Business Whispers, tbwadvisors.com.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Dr. Doreen Galley there. And you're going to start hearing her voice a little bit more here on Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. Microcenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, Microcenter is your resource. Check out Microcenter.com today. Microcenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Keith M. Seador joins me now. And Keith, I look out across the App Store on a regular basis, and we all... have to do this, and it doesn't matter whether we're in the Apple App Store or if you're over on the Android side, you're in the Android world. I am sure that there are tips and tricks that you use that apply across both of the platforms in regards to spotting quality applications and avoiding all of the traps, the subscriptions, the hidden costs, and all of that. What's the first thing you look for whenever you're getting an app?
Well, the first thing I want to see is, does the in-app purchases logo appear first and foremost? Because if it just says get and I can download the app for free, that's a good starting point. But really... And it's honestly, it's less for me, Benjamin, and it's more for my kids because I'm at a saturation point with apps. I mean, literally, I have however many blank pages Apple allows you on the iPhone, mine are all filled because between the App Store, the free app a day pages, I've been downloading things for years going, oh, that looks cool. Oh, that looks neat. Maybe I'll get some functionality out of that. And it's just, I've become this digital pack rat and I can't stand it. But I've never gotten around to cleaning it out.
Yeah.
So the reality of it is that I am using much more discernment when it comes to app downloads for my children. And my kids are young teen and still single digits. And I will get through the parental controls. So-and-so has requested to download an app. You know, do you want to approve it? And the first thing I look at is it age appropriate for the kid? If it is, we can move along. Then the second thing I look at is consumer reviews. Mm-hmm. I want to see, oh, this is a scam. Or I want to see, oh, this is really, really useful. And then this is where your ability to have been paid attention in school is really going to come into play. Because if you're a really good reader and you have really good reading skills and you can read between the lines, you can kind of discern whether or not this review, whether it's like seven words, was left by some paid respondent or if it was actually by a user of the product. And if I get some good spidey tingling vibes on, you know, an app that it seems okay, I'll give the okay for my kids to download it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's a starting point. For myself, I'll go back to some games. You know, there were things like Crossy Road, where you have the chicken and stuff like that. And you get a lot of people who, again, I'm going back years and years, were making knockoff versions of games. And okay, there were variations in their game icon and variations in gameplay. And are they coming from Kazakhstan and all kinds of parts unknown? Are they from more legitimate sources? So really, it's a matter of discernment. Do you have a sharp mind?
Again,
are you paying attention?
Yes.
Are you listening? Are you looking closely? Are you separating the digital wheat from the chaff? That's what it comes down to, Benjamin, for me personally. How about you?
So I don't download a whole lot of apps. truth be told, I do have some apps. And there are a few apps that I keep on the phone that I don't open, but once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I am nowhere near occupying all of the space, the various blank pages. I'm sure of that. I do have a couple of apps on there that I waffle over. Candy Crush is one of them.
So pedestrian.
Oh yeah, but the thing is, I can simultaneously ignore it for a month or two at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm sitting at the DMV and I've already checked all of my email and I've already done the obligatory checking the headlines and all of that. And I still have another
at the DMV. I'm looking to see if they have any cake.
Any cake?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, can you hand me a piece of that cake over there? Yeah, I know it's Doreen's birthday or whatever, you know.
You got it.
What's funny is, okay, so Doreen was the name that popped into my head, and it's kind of funny because we've got a new person who guested in for you recently mm-hmm. by the name of Dr. Doreen Galley. Totally unintentional, but anyways. So, yeah, I have to have something mindless to occupy the remaining 4 hours that I'm going to spend at the DMV. That's why Candy Crush is there.
Think about it, Benjamin. Cake is communal. There's If there's cake, there's cake for everybody. The piece of cake. I mean, there's one cookie, but there's lots of cake.
So I do, when I'm looking at apps, one of the things I do, I check a lot of the same things you're doing. I don't worry about the age appropriate because I'm already way too old. Yeah. But I do, I watch on the installs. What are they asking for? What are the things that are highlighted along the way that they're getting gaining permission for? And it annoys me when some video game wants to have access to all of my photos, have access to my email, have access to my location, have access to my voicemail, have access to my bank accounts, have access to my health records. You know,
I don't know what it's like on the Android side. But Apple, over the last couple of years, has made it very easy to opt out of those things.
Yes, I can opt out of them, but it does raise a creep factor when they're asking for a lot of stuff that they don't need. And that's an indication to me to go, yep, bye-bye, off into the trash can. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Yes, I do answer the phone on a regular basis. You don't have to wait for the radio show to be on the air wherever you're at. This is just, I do that, do this whole thing a little bit differently. If I don't answer, that just means I'm not available at the moment, but that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Well, we talked a while back about that Ricoh 4K 6500 lumen projector.
That was with the ultra short throw and all of that. Yeah, laser phosphor or something like that. Yeah,
Well, it's a lot better than an arc, right?
Yes. The Tony Stark arc reactor just lighting up just everything in the room. Yes, okay, go on.
All right, I'm honest. Look, let's be honest. For most people, the Ricoh UHL 3660, that's the model for this projector. It isn't an impulse buy. It's got a $6,000 price tag, and that makes it more of a considered purchase for individuals and even for some companies.
Sure.
But to get a 4K projector, they can cast a big picture from as close as a foot and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the brightness horsepower at 6,500 lumens to make that image vivid even with the lights on. That's useful way beyond home theater.
Yeah. You know, actually, it's interesting because you talk about business, and I'll tell you, and we're talking in 1998, and $1998, the first projector I got involved with buying, it was 800 lumens, and it was, they got us a discount and got us down to $14,000 for this, and you know, and that was, it was a business need. We had to have that, and yeah, that's That's a chunk of change. So, you know, a $6,000 price tag is not all that bad.
Well, let's talk about business needs.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. I've got a couple of ideas. I mean, I'm thinking about conference rooms for companies that don't only do meetings online. Yeah. Sometimes they have people actually in the room and at the table.
It happens once in a while, yeah.
And you may want them to be able to see what you're presenting on a screen or on a wall without being in the dark.
Yes.
I mean, this looks like you thought about it. You got ready for it. I mean, it's more incredible. I tell you, if I'm a high-ticket law firm, I don't want to have to turn the lights off to show what I'm showing.
Sure.
Then there's also training. Mm-hmm. And there's informational displays, you know, at museums or exhibits, for example, or stores that want to project onto their street-facing windows. Mm-hmm. What a great way to show that sale, 150% off, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, admittedly, there's also geeks and nerds like us. we love this stuff.
Yeah.
My home office is in my basement. Mm-hmm. I could put a big white foam core poster board behind me and cast a video of Hawaii or Antarctic penguin packs behind me without any of the scalp sizzle of those.
Weaveling along.
Software generated fake backgrounds, you know?
Yeah.
A performer or a theater company or production studio or church could do their version of the same thing. Mm-hmm, if you don't know the meaning of the word scrim, S-C-R-I-M.
Mm-hmm. Then you weren't a theater geek.
Also true. You know, I'll bet a lot of the Gulf Sim facilities are loving it too.
Okay.
You can even shift this from landscape to portrait mode. It doesn't have to be wide. It can be tall.
Mm-hmm.
And with that laser phosphor design, you've got a dual laser setup that lets it keep going, even if one should fail. And it does come with a 3-year guarantee.
Okay. So wait a second. So it has two sets of lasers
laser
in it.
Laser phosphor.
Is it running both of them at the same time for the 6,500? And then if one of them fails, okay.
Or if you want to drop to a more economical mode.
Okay. All right. Sure.
All right. I don't ask how they're switching it inside. I just want to see it work.
Yeah.
Look, folks, drop us a line. Let me know. Let Ben know what other things about this projector sound interesting. How the laser phosphor light engine works intrigues me, but it might not thrill you. The ultra short lenses, how to decide what's important for where you want to use a projector or whatever else might make your neurons tingle. There are things about projectors that are application specific. So if you've got an idea where having something put an image where there wasn't an image before.
Yeah.
Let us know how you want that to manifest. We'll make some recommendations.
Sure. I'm just imagining, like, so my living room is bright throughout the afternoon. The afternoon sun comes strolling in and beaming in, just shining in. Full power, and there's a small portion of time where we can't watch television in there because it just reflects off the wall behind us or off the wall where the television is. It's
and perfect. That's why you have six televisions in the bedroom.
Seven, but no, we don't have that many. Just one in there. But you know,
well, there are alternatives anyway. But no, yeah.
I like
projectors.
This.
Yeah, projectors are strange. They were big for a while, then they were small for a while, then they were doing special things for a while. And when you find one that does great stuff, just have to acknowledge it.
Definitely. As for now, that's Marty Winston. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me.
After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they have all kinds of different things they will try to get just a little further into our lives. The bad guys come up with all kinds of these different crazy schemes. One of the things that I've seen in my own text messages, but I know this is expanding in other places. You can see this in other different platforms. I've got a friend who reported it on Telegram. I got another friend who reported it over on X, I think is what it was. It's all over the place. Somebody sends out a message and the message says hello and nothing else, or hey, we haven't talked in a while. And another one might just say Benjamin with a question mark, no other words. And the whole thing here that they're trying to do is start an engagement. There's a validation that's happening when this happens. They're validating that, hey, somebody's on the other end. And that other somebody may be gullible enough to go, yes, this is Benjamin, or hello back, and open up that conversation. One of the things that we see over in the iPhone world, and I don't know how this works out over in the Android world, but the first couple of messages are you get a chance to report that it's junk. You get a chance to say, yeah, this isn't really who they say they are. They're looking to get past that level. They're looking to send enough messages back and forth to play coy with the whole idea of whether or not you really know them, whether or not they really know you. So I might answer with, this is Benjamin, who are you? What, you don't remember me? Look, I see a phone number. I have no idea who you are. Well, why don't you take a guess? So they're prolonging that conversation. There's 100 ways that they're going to try to prolong this, to get past that report junk phase, and then to lure you in, to lure you into whatever scheme that they have next. And this is how a lot of the romance schemes start. This is how a lot of the different long-lost friend schemes start. This is how some of the different money schemes start. The one called the pig butchering scheme. They're looking to get you invested in this communication that you've already spent a lot of time into it. You've spent a matter of however long, an hour into this. You're invested now, and that's their goal. They're looking to have you invest enough time so that you go to the next step, so that you take the next approach that they are seeking you to take. Look, if you don't recognize somebody, just delete the message. And it doesn't matter what platform you're on. It doesn't matter what you're dealing with. Don't engage with the bad guys. There's only one thing that's going to come out of this, and it's going to be heartache and headache for you. Avoid any of this. Just hit delete, report junk, whatever it is. Ignore it if you have to. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Bringing you news and knowledge from the world of computers and technology, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. And sometimes those bits and pieces of technology may extend far off into space. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, I kind of gave a tease as to the topic, but go ahead. Let's dive into this.
Space. Well, I wanted to mention the fact that SpaceX has got this new Starship.
Okay, yeah. It's been around for a little while.
Yeah, but, you know, they haven't really done any payloads or anything. They're talking about it's because it's a reusable.
Yes.
What they were going to do is put a whole bunch of machinery and whatever on this great big rocket, fly it out into space.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, by the time it got there, it would be out of fuel or close to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they'd send up a second rocket to refuel it.
Mm-hmm.
And the second rocket would come back to the back to Earth, and the first rocket would go off to Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, go on.
There's so many things wrong with that idea.
Well, I mean, there's a lot that has to happen here, and a lot of different things all the way along, whether we're talking about whether we're talking about Starship or one of the many other rockets that SpaceX is working on. You have to realize, to the listeners, you have to realize that SpaceX has put more rockets into space in the short span of time than they've been around than any of the other people out there other than the actual governments of Russia and the United States. And that's coming in pretty close now to evening out. I can't remember what the name of it is. The Falcon project, the Falcon 9 has the record for the second most amount of launches. Of course, a number of those are reusable launches.
Sure.
Which is exciting in itself.
Yeah, that's wonderful right there. I would like to see them first off really make a platform in space to actually make and manufacture stuff to go to Mars.
So, I think that's kind of a tricky thing.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot of assembly that is going to happen in space. If we are going to go to Mars, there are a number of different directions that pop into my head. And one of them has long been the idea of we send some very slow rockets off towards Mars that have a lot of fuel with them. We put them into elliptical orbits so that there's fuel off partway there.
Yeah.
Because part of the big issue with Mars is right now we're looking at a 9-month spread. We might drop it down to 8 months for us to get from here to there. But it all has to do with, of course, as you know, Steve, we have to break through the atmosphere. And yes. A good portion of the fuel that is involved is breaking through the atmosphere. Then we have to have enough fuel to get from orbit all the way out to Mars.
That's it.
So planting fuel along the way gives the ability both in orbit, so we can launch to Mars from orbit, but also halfway there, allows us to do a far higher speed towards Mars.
Oh, true.
But one of the things we're going to have to do is we're going to have to figure out ways to get, let's say, 10 separate rockets all in the same spot, all linked together as kind of that mobile gas station halfway to Mars.
Oh, yeah.
But we also need to do the same thing with, we need a bigger rocket than these little four-man Dragon crew capsules that are existing for going right now up to the ISS. The space involved there is, it is probably, and I don't know for sure, but it's probably just a little wider than four people sitting in a 747 economy class seat.
Sure.
You know,
it's really that you're going to need, I figure that if in the first year,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have at least 500,000 people on Mars to make it workable.
I don't know that we have to have that. There is a goal that they have stated that for a fully self-sustaining culture, et cetera, on Mars, we have to have 1 million people. Now, we can do that bit by bit. It doesn't have to be
all at one time.
All at one time, but it is going to take a lot. But there's a lot of interesting things. I saw a video recently, and it talked about Elon Musk may actually be far more brilliant than we ever thought about. So one of the things they talked about, okay, so he's got Boring Company. Okay, yeah. Boring. And it sounds kind of boring. Okay, he's going to bore tunnels underneath the Earth to move trains back and forth. Well, what are we going to want as far as habitats? We have the idea of habitats on top of the planet of Mars. But what if we were to bore holes into Mars and do the habitats underground? That removes a lot of the need to move stuff there other than the drilling equipment. We have to do other things along the way. But then we move into, okay, so he's put money into the solar company. I can't remember the name of the solar company off the top of my head.
Right.
But we're going to need massive amounts of solar arrays. And he's putting a lot of money into electric cars in the form of Tesla. Well, we aren't going to have fossil fuels there. And then we're going to have some level of robots. Well, yes, they're working on, you know, the Tesla, robots that they're working on.
Yeah.
And then we have to have some level of mechanism to run all of the robots, run all of the solar panels, run all of the vehicles, run all of the boring machines. And that explains why he's invested into XAI. So that video was very interesting. Kind of a glimpse at what Elon Musk may actually be working for.
Well, it's true, but you know, you also have to understand that You have to have a certain amount of sunlight for people to survive.
Yes.
And that is true. Japan had a really good idea because they didn't want to put a whole bunch of windows in their buildings. So what they did was put up a solar collector or collectors on the roof and then used fiber optics to bring it down into all the different rooms so that the people are actually working in sunlight.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that's actually doable, a matter of the same kind of fiber optics, but you bring them in a kind of a different way where the collectors are much larger, but they're forcing the light into a much smaller fiber optic tube.
Yeah.
And then presenting that within an underground structure and kind of the description I've got. Yeah. We've only got about 20 seconds more. Any closing thoughts on this?
Well, it's the thing was that I had already thought about the solar panels, but it's a lot of other, not just radiation, but the idea we don't know what's actually up there in the core of Mars.
Little green men. I doubt it, but it's always fun to imagine Marvin the Martian. But that's another story for another day. This is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The world of IT is a tricky world. I've been in it for 35 years now, over 35 years, and I have dealt with all kinds of different situations. And what I'm going to give you here over the course of this segment is a bit of information in regards to skills that every IT person should have. Now, you can look at this for your own benefit. As far as being an IT person, you can look at this for your own benefit as someone who's looking to hire an IT person. And what are the things that you should be looking for? And this all kind of melds into each other. And we can start seeing some of these things as far as what is going to make for a successful IT technician or practitioner. Now, IT is a big, huge world. So there's a lot of different realms in there. It doesn't have to necessarily be a technician. Now, you want to look at all of this from the standpoint of being able to identify for yourself or for others what things are going to make this person shine. In today's technology-driven world, that all of these different people in IT are in high demand. Yes, there have been some layoffs lately in some of the bigger corporations. There is always going to be shakeup, and there's going to be different things that they're going to blame. Oh, we're going to AI, which is not an end-all be-all. It is not a perfect cure for all of the different things there. People have to actually understand AI in order to work with AI. So there's all of these different things. I'm keen in here today just on the key issues of the people that should be in IT. So first and foremost, the obvious one, they have to have a solid foundation of technical knowledge and expertise in whatever they're working with. They should have a thorough understanding of hardware, software, networking, security protocols, all of these different things. Make sure that they are at least somewhat well-rounded. Someone who is only a programmer and they don't understand the hardware, they don't understand the networking, they don't understand security, they are going to be at a disadvantage. Oh, I took 17 courses in this particular obscure programming language is not someone who is going to be well-rounded. They're going to be able to deal with, think of like the hardware drawer. They're only going to be able to deal with the 7-pound hammer. They're not going to be able to wield a 9-pound hammer or a ball-peen hammer. They're going to look at everything. We've heard this analogy before. To the guy with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you want to make sure that there's at least some additional area of interest and expertise, and it's expanded. It's not focused in this just one small little area. So any kind of person in technology is going to face all kinds of different numerous challenges that require critical thinking, problem-solving skills. They've got to be able to analyze complex issues. They have to look at why something's broken, find out why. They have to be able to identify the root cause and develop an effective solution to that problem. This sometimes requires that analytical thinking, but it also will require creativity. It'll require being able to adapt on the fly and to address all of these different situations. Along with that means you're going to be looking for someone, or you need to be someone, who has a certain level of attention to detail. With all of these complex systems and technologies, it's going to require accuracy. It's going to require being able to figure out what is going on, and it can be one small little error. And those small errors lead to significant consequences. It is essential that anybody dealing with technology has an ability to be meticulous, to be detail-oriented, to be able to sit down and write out all of the different steps along the way. They can't be someone who just dives in. Oh, I know how to fix this. They dive in, and then they get lost in all of this, and they never actually solve the problem. So they have to be able to follow the instructions well. But moving beyond that, there are other soft skills that are actually becoming further and further more important along the way. I want you to think about the customer service skills, the communication skills that are going to be needed along the way. IT is something that we used to take the IT guy and we'd shove him in a closet and we would see him only when we wanted something fixed. Today, we want everything fixed. We want the IT guy to or gal to go through and interact with everybody on a regular basis. We're talking about the internal people. We're talking about external people. You might have IT talking to your customers to sort out a problem. If you do not have an IT person who is capable of excellent customer service skills, you've got a problem. Every IT person should be friendly, should be approachable. They should be patient. We don't want somebody in there who is just going to be frustrated. Oh, I can't believe I have to talk to an end user. What? Yes, you have to find out what's going on. You have to be able to fix this. Effective communication is essential in every profession. It's no different for IT. Yes, we have to recognize that some of the people in some of the areas of IT may be quirky, but we need to encourage them to accept those quirks, but still deal with people. every IT person should be able to communicate the technical concepts and solutions to non-technical individuals very clearly. They should be able to break it down to a fellow technician, to a manager, to somebody who is, I don't know, sweeping the floor or something like this. They also need to be able to listen actively. They need to be able to understand the needs of their colleagues all the way throughout. Along with this, time management skills. And in the world of IT, time is of the essence and deadlines are often tight. Therefore, anybody who's in IT should have excellent time management skills. They should be able to look at a problem and say, it's going to take me 90 minutes to fix this. And they shouldn't come back and 3 minutes later, oh, I fixed it. And they shouldn't be spending I don't know how long it's going to take, but I think it's going to be 90 minutes. And then it turns out to be 3 weeks later. No, they need to be able to have some level of information there. They need to be able to figure these things out. They also need to be able to prioritize all of the tasks. And I'll tell you, prioritization is a key item. They need to be able to understand certain things have a higher level of importance and certain things are a lot lower. They also need to meet those project deadlines on an efficient basis. Last and not least, any person who is going into IT should be committed to a continuous learning and professional development course. And I'm not talking a class, I'm talking a course. They need to be committed to moving through, figuring out more in regards to IT, but also in regards to people. Technology is constantly evolving. And to remain competitive, everyone needs to stay abreast of what are the latest of the advancements that are coming along. This means willingness to learn, to expand that skill set continually, and move forward regularly. In the end, whether someone's starting out in the field or looking to enhance their skills, they need to remember that success is not just about what you know, but how you apply it. They need to keep learning, keep growing, and someday they'll even be better than we could ever imagine. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Felix's question, why does nostalgia seem to hit technology harder and faster than other industries? Felix reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out as well. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I'll get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. And this is a very deep topic, and this is one that I sit here and I will tell you that a lot of people do not get sentimental about the cars from the last couple of years. There's been incremental improvements along the way. I don't get sentimental about a lot of the motor vehicles out there. A lot of the motor vehicles that I've had over the years, especially the cars. Motorcycles, that's a little bit different. I will tell you that occasionally I will wax nostalgic over my most recent motorcycle, which I haven't ridden in 19 years. I got into an accident, broke my clavicle, and gave my wife kind of a scare with that. But the issue there was that motorcycle was released 41 years ago. 1984 V6.5 Magna. Loved that motorcycle. It was wonderful. And it will keep pace with a lot of the motorcycles of today. But computers, that's a little bit different. Computers, We are moving at a lightning pace. You know, people, they get nostalgic over cars from the 60s, from the 50s, from the 40s. But people are nostalgic over Windows 10. They're holding on to it, hoping that something better will come along. Windows 7 was amazing, and I know there are people that hold on to the idea of Windows XP, but technology moves so quickly, unlike furniture or fashion or even cars and motorcycles. Digital technology evolves so quickly that what feels recent can be completely obsolete in just a matter of a couple of years. We look at this and we are upgrading regularly to keep pace with everything that's been released. And we get nostalgic for things that, well, we've seen a lot of just changes and increase between Windows 10 and Windows 11, Windows 7 and Windows 11. And we have this bond and attachment that we have formed with that interface that we were working on. I'm very nostalgic about DOS. I mean, that's how far back I go. But I've seen so many different things evolve over the years. I was running Windows 3.0, I ran Windows 286 for a while. I was talking with someone recently about something called Desk View, which was a multitasking interface that was back and big back in the late 80s, early 90s. But we have this muscle memory that has built up. We've learned a lot of the workflows. We've discovered so much in some of these different things along the way. And even the sounds of some of these old software packages can trigger a sense of comfort and control. That's why people occasionally will be very happy to when they hear the old Mario theme from whatever Mario game was back in the 90s or whenever. They go, oh, wow, I love that. These connect us to very specific life experiences. And tech nostalgia, all nostalgia, is tied to our personal history. That first phone you had, that first game that you conquered really well, the operating system that you really cut your teeth on and you really moved to that next level where you understood computers a lot better than you ever had before, and you were able to leverage them for what you wanted to do. Modern technology is going to lack that same feeling, that permanence in our minds. Older technology had a certain sense of finality. When you bought a device or a program, you knew you'd likely use it for years. Now, everything is temporary, and it's built up upon itself. It's cloud-based. It's subject to change at a moment's notice. We can hold on to earlier versions of Word, but there's so many new features that they threw at us that we're like, okay, fine, we'll upgrade. I've upgraded Photoshop a number of times over the years, and I've done the same with any of these other software packages. Photoshop a little bit slower, and I'll hold on to Photoshop for a matter of 3, 4, 5 revisions because I learn it and I don't use it enough to really justify that big, huge price every time, every year when it comes out. but we do have a backlash that has been growing against complexity. As technology becomes more locked down, more ad-filled, more privacy-invasive, each of these different layers start getting in there and they start attacking at our comfort level. And I'll tell you that I like some of the simpler things that I've done over the years. That simplicity of DOS, it feels refreshing. I do a number of different things these days. I do a lot of different setups for this radio show. I have a lot of things that are built up utilizing, it's now command scripts, but basically going in and doing batch files, doing a lot of the automation with DOS-based programs, command line-based programs, and it just goes through and it presents all of the different processing options, and I just program. I do this, then this, then this, then this, then this, then it's a number of steps. But I know how that works, and it is just a lot simpler than trying to set up some of this stuff in a GUI-based format, graphical user interface, GUI, GUI. So, look, nostalgia isn't just about missing the past. It's about missing our comfort level with that sense of control. And that simplicity that modern tech just starts to whittle away at, to take away from us. Look, we need to live in both worlds. We can still remain nostalgic about some of these things from the past, but we also do need to remember that we need to be thinking about the future. We need to be thinking about the path, the road ahead, and be prepared for it all the way along. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, the work environment, and how it all just combines in and works together. And I want to go back to a news article that you probably have heard about in recent weeks, a matter of Amazon offering up an ultimatum to a large number of workers. The number that's been floating around is somewhere around 350,000 employees have been given an ultimatum. You must relocate or resign. Wait. Resign? Yes, and this is where I'm going to dive in a little bit deeper, because I did, at one point in my past career, I did resign from a position, not realizing some of the implications. After the fact, I found out that it was a matter of a constructive dismissal, and there's a lot to that, and it wasn't even in regards to me. It was in regards to a relative, but that's another story for another day. This ultimatum raises a lot of questions, And we can approach this from maybe it's legal, maybe it's ethical, maybe it's just scruples, maybe it's cultural, who knows. And we've got to think about, and we're culture, I should mention. And we have to figure out a lot of this, not just for Amazon, but also for the modern American workplace overall. So let's dive into a couple of different questions that have popped in to my mind as far as things we should be discussing. Is it legal to demand a resignation? Well, you can ask for a resignation. It gets complicated. In the United States, a lot of our employment is at will, meaning a company can let go of you or I for almost any reason as long as it's not discriminatory or retaliatory. We can also, on the other side, as employees, leave at any time. Now, employers can suggest a resignation as an alternative to termination. However, if resignation is coerced, say under threat or duress, it actually might not even hold up legally. It could potentially be viewed as a constructive discharge. Now, no state actually explicitly allows forced resignation, but many don't prevent the practice unless it's got some level of coercion, discrimination, or it violates a contract. Now, let's go into something else that's really big, and this usually pops up every time we hear about some of the larger layoffs at places like Microsoft. There's something called the WARN Act. It is the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act. And if you have more than 100 employees, you have to give 60 days notice for any kind of mass layoffs or closings. However, something like this, a forced relocation or resignation, that actually may duck right around the edge of the language for WARN. If Amazon can argue it offered continued employment just at a new location, they may avoid some of the violations legally, although who knows if it's going to be ethically. Now, we have another thing that we have to also throw in on all of this, and that is Amazon recently talked about it's somewhere around $100 billion investment by the end of the year in AI. This kind of spend signals a shift towards automation in a number of areas, potentially reducing the need for many of these roles. These optics are going to be hard to ignore. Employees are asked to uproot or quit, while the machines are going to be replacing each of these all the way along, especially since we think about this, some of those employees may relocate anywhere from roughly halfway across the country. If they're anywhere in the middle states, their options are basically both of them are on the coast, and they don't have any, you know, Midwest or any of that that they can rely on. They have to relocate, so potentially pretty far. So why would somebody relocate 1,000 miles, selling off their old house, buying a new house and the new destination under something like this? Because they can hope to keep a job for a year or so? There's a lot of things that are going to come out of this. Are future employees going to trust Amazon? I mean, would you join a company that might demand relocation again with a little warning? What kind of precedent does this set? Are we going to normalize relocation ultimatums as a soft firing tactic? And what's going to happen to the morale, the employee retention along the way? I foresee a high level of churn where people are headed out the door, especially amongst the top skilled professionals that aren't willing to gamble their lives on sudden twists and turns and office mandates that could heavily impact them. This is an erosion of any kind of culture that might be positive at Amazon. This is something that's going to have an impact on reputation. This is going to set up ripples throughout the entire tech industry as everybody's looking at this and going, did Amazon get away with it? And that's rough. That's a lot of rough stuff to talk about after a week of Prime Days. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Chloe's question, why does my cloud storage say it's full even though I deleted a bunch of files? And this is something I've experienced, and I've gone through this, and it happens on both sides of the equation. I deal with sending a lot of files to a lot of different people, and sometimes I need to make sure that I disconnect with some of those people after I've sent them their files, because what happens is that still ties up space here. I can go through and I can delete the files, but it doesn't mean that they're actually gone yet. It's like throwing out old food, but if you forget to take out the trash, then it's not really out of your house. So whenever we're working with these things, we, especially in the cloud, we're not always sure what is going to be held onto in some kind of recycle bin out in the cloud and still take up space. A lot of these different applications, these different cloud storage locations, they are intentionally making sure that you doing a lot of different efforts to make sure you don't accidentally delete. And somebody else doesn't delete the file that you think is so important. So there's a lot of different directions that we can go in with this. I mean, yes, you can go in the direction, if you know you absolutely don't need it, you can hit shift delete. That should, not 100%, should remove it. The way files have always been deleted, they put a special character that says this file's no longer here. This file is deleted. But when we're dealing with cloud storage, some of the providers, again, as I mentioned, they're going to consider that kind of a hidden file. And there are a lot of different files that may still be sitting there. They're hidden away to you, but they're still seen by that cloud provider. We also need to look at the idea of synced folders that you may have on multiple devices. So you've got a computer off to the left and a computer off to the right, and you delete the file on that computer to the left. The computer on the right, actually, if settings are such, that computer on the right may actually restore the file back. And you're sitting there and you're going, I thought I deleted this. So you want to make sure you get both computers on at the same time. And you also need to remember that there are a lot of other things that are out there. Shared folders will count against your quota if you are the owner of that shared folder, even though you may not even see some of the things that are below. You're supposed to. But again, some of these cloud storage locations, these different programs that are out there, they play weird games with how these files are secured and so forth. Also, remember that some services will take a little bit of time to actually reflect the quota update. They only update it a matter of once every day or two. So you may make a bunch of deletions, you may free up a bunch of space, but it's not going to register until tomorrow, or maybe even the next day. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.